Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and welcome to the kitchen table. It's so nice to have all of you joining us today, and I want to begin by saying hello to Michelle Yark, our executive producer. How are you doing?
I'm great, and you?
I'm doing pretty doggone good, I'm going to tell you right now. A little warm outside. Oh, I got overheated yesterday. I needed me a cold towel.
Guess who had to bring him the cold towel?
I have people. I was busy outside walking the farm at White Oak and checking
playing
out,
in the heat. Your mama
out,
never told you not to stay outside too long?
Yeah, but that was a long time ago.
It still holds true.
Yeah, and I was. Yeah, but you know, you walk around a little chicken pen and you see little peeps walking around and you don't want.
They're not bothered.
They're not bothered and they're all full of feathers.
So you think
it must be pretty cool out here.
You thinking you're a peep?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Across the glass wall, of course, Dean Slom, our engineer, keeping us sound balanced and music dynamic over there. What's going on, Slom?
Hey, y'all. Hey.
Tell me something. What's happening?
I'm just trying to stay cool. I need a towel assistant.
So, Michelle, what else going on? Tell me something.
I am melting in all this heat. You?
Well, you know, I'm always cool as a cucumber myself, as you know. It really is. I mean, we're talking about hot, but I mean, what do we expect? I mean, we're in the months that pump heat in Louisiana. I mean, that's why this bayou country has invented the slushy drinks, and that's I'm sure we had to invent those big old oversized tumblers of blue ice that you see kids sucking all over the grocery store. Slum, you ever had one of those
colored ice?
Yeah, slushy,
cool.
Slurpee.
So you've had those?
Well, of course I have. You know, I brought you a little something. I didn't know if you would the Slurpee. But I thought you might like to slurp a little iced coffee.
That's very nice.
Do you like iced coffee?
Yeah, I like iced coffee. It's very nice. It's refreshing today, of course, you know.
I just kind of thought it might help you cool down because, you know, John drinks hot coffee like 50 cups, and I barely am exaggerating that. 50 cups a day. And in this heat, I don't know how you do it.
You know, I come from a place where there was a little coffee pot sitting in a cast iron skillet on the back burner of the stove every day. And you just, all hours a day, you poured your little demitasse, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the ritual. Is that why there are these little demitasse cups scattered throughout the office everywhere?
Well, talking about the heat, just think of what it must have been like before we had ice accessible to everybody in Louisiana. We got to talking about this yesterday and said, we ought to talk about ice, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine it, especially in all the garb that the women had to wear. You men always have it a little bit easier. I get smothered just thinking about all those skirts and tumblers and
petticoats and other petty stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, y'all, you really don't have to think that far back. I mean, believe it or not, it was just a couple centuries ago. I mean, you know, that's pretty far back. But back in the 1800s, ice was actually harvested. And when you cool off with that slushy or that ice-filled cold drink, you have a guy to thank for the fact that you have that ice.
Marco Polo.
No, indeed not. Nope. Forget about that. You're getting way ahead of this story. I'm talking about Frederick Tudor, or the guy that they call the Ice King. That's who I'm talking about.
Ice King.
Yeah.
I'm
going to tell you.
Yeah, he was from the cold Northeast, wasn't he? Like
he
Boston?
He was from Boston, and he was called Ice King because when he looked out of his frosty winter windows and gazed over the Charles River that was frozen, he said, he must have had an aunt or an uncle down south, you know?
Yeah.
He knew that while he was chilled to the bone up in Massachusetts, he must have had some cousins or some relatives, I would imagine, sweltering down here in the South, who may very well welcome a little bit of that ice he was looking at. And he didn't exactly come from humble beginnings, this guy, either. He dropped out of school at 13, old Frederick did, and went to live on the family estate.
Oh,
yeah, the country estate outside of Boston to hunt and fish all day long. Now, to me, that doesn't really sound like a bad little gig, you know, a bad way to spend your time. But as the winter set in and the ponds on the frozen estate froze solid, he had an idea. Why not harvest that ice and start to sell it? Now, you can imagine him going to
I don't know, his bank or his funder or the shipping company and say, I got an idea. We're going to ship ice.
That must have been the first brain freeze in history, right?
Yeah.
Well, he did meet with some less than enthusiastic folks.
I can imagine.
No one actually thought that the plan would work, but he and his brothers tried to convince shipmasters in Boston Harbor to ship his ice. They just wouldn't do it. But, as you said, you know, his family, they had entrepreneurial spirit, had a little cash, a little family fortune in his pocket, didn't hurt. So they purchased their own ship.
Yeah, decided they're going to sell ice to Martinique, right?
Yeah. Well, loaded the ship, 80 tons of ice headed to Martinique.
That was his first shipment.
First shipment.
Well, Martinique wasn't buying it. No matter how much made it, they weren't buying. No ice was sold to Martinique, and Frederick tried again the next year, but a trade embargo had closed off the Caribbean for 2 years. So finally.
That was probably the best thing ever happened to him.
That was the best thing that ever, because in 1810, he turned his first little profit. And saw that there was a possibility, which, of course, gave courage to other people to help to assist, because profit was always a good thing. And by 1820, cities like Savannah and Charleston and, of course, the Big Easy, New Orleans, became very loyal customers. And the first ice shipment to arrive in New Orleans, think about this, 1826. And according to legend, this is even the funny part of it, according to legend, was ordered by the mayor of the city to be dumped into the Mississippi River because it would chill the innards and make consumptives of the people. Now,
what is
a consumptive of the people when they're dumping ice into the Mississippi River? The first load getting to New Orleans, 1826. Imagine piloting that boat all the way from New England to be dumped in the river. Who's this guy anyway?
Well, you know, it got me to thinking, who could this numbskull be? And if legend holds true, it seems that there could be one of two culprits in this ice caper. Either John Fitzpatrick, who I believe was actually a Virginian, seems like he'd have been a little, you know, understanding, or Walter Flower. You know, of course, it doesn't really matter because the edict, well, it didn't hold water, so to speak. Ice made its way into the homes and business of New Orleanians, needless to say. And, you know, in the north, the ice was sawed into blocks. They floated a little ways downstream. It was lifted onto conveyor belts. And then it was stacked in these northern ice houses. Then it was shipped down south. But it was about a two-month journey from Boston to New Orleans. So you can imagine that as the ships reached warmer waters.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that ice had to melt, and the profits melted with it.
Oh, yeah, the profits just melted away. And the need was there, and the unpredictability, I guess I should say, of delivery really prompted New Orleans to make history at the end of the Civil War. It was 1868. They built the first ice-making plant in the entire United States, and rightfully so. I mean, think about this, you know, Civil War over, the Creole planters had just thrived and made millions of dollars before the Civil War. The lifestyle was kind of crumbling at this point in time, and they had time to sit around and think about how to make a little living.
And they needed to make money.
They need to make money. So 2 years later, the New Orleans Ice Company, 1870, opened its doors on Howard Avenue with an impressive building that had 3-foot thick walls with cork insulation. I even had walk-in coolers in my first restaurant that had cork insulation. So,
really?
Yeah, so they still were doing that. The ceilings were 80 feet high in the New Orleans Ice House to accommodate storing these ice blocks.
That's amazing. You know, it wasn't long after that that blocks of ice were being delivered to meat markets, as you can understand, down in the quarter.
Meat and seafood, I'm sure, were desperate for.
Oh, I'm certain. But it was just enough ice to keep their perishables cold for the day, and then during the evening, the meat went back to the ice house where it was stored, and they would pick it up again in the morning with the daily ice supply, and it went on day after day.
So business started to grow from not only selling ice, but now all of a sudden there were cold storage.
There was cold storage. Ice was also started to be delivered to homes for folks to keep in their ice box.
Yeah, and thus the name of our refrigerators, right?
That's
ice
right.
Box, huh?
Oh, I grew up calling them an ice box. I still call it the ice box.
I call it an ice box, and we had an ice box.
I bet.
We did. We had an ice box.
You were uptown.
Oh, you better believe. We had a little ice box, a little block of ice in the bottom, and I'll never forget my man Falls saying, Femme la porte.
Oh, no. Close the door.
Close the door. Femme la porte. Because she only spoke French. Femme la porte.
What'd you do? You just chipped the ice?
Yeah, the ice box was like a little, like a television set almost today. It was about 4 or 3 feet high and had two little doors, and there was a drip pan in the bottom. And it was insulated. Tin inside. And I forget, it was just sort of tin inside. Two or three little shelves, and you kind of pile everything in there. And the ice truck would come around, and you'd get a little block of ice and put it on the bottom shelf. And there was an ice pick in there, so when you wanted a drink, you'd open up the little door, and you had to quickly chip, and it would fall. The chips would fall in the bottom pan, and you'd put your hand in there and just grab the ice. It wasn't too sanitary.
Did you put anything in with the ice block, or it was strictly for the ice?
No. And then
you didn't keep anything cool?
No, and then I'll never forget when Prepare Falls had the great idea that he heard that you could salt ice and make it colder. So he salted ice. He salted ice to freeze it cold, and he had a big smile on his face till he needed a drink of ice water. The early 20s saw ice plants and storage companies crop up, like the one in Coushatta, Louisiana, and other companies were increasing their capacity for ice handling. New Orleans' largest ice company, the Crescent City Ice Company, founded in 1928 by J.F. Krantz. It was big business until the 40s, when, of course, Freon refrigerators and home freezers entered the scene. And then all of a sudden, we start to see the demise. Not totally, because today, of course, there's still big ice houses.
Well, of course. And, I mean, ice is a $2.9 billion, that's with a B, billion-dollar industry. And, of course, the United States isn't alone for its craving for shaved or crushed ice. In Italy, there's the Granita.
Italian ice
resembles our snowball with flavored syrups. Panama has an interesting concoction. They also put condensed milk in.
Yeah, raspa.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes honey.
Yeah.
Guatemala has the granizada, cooked fruits, nuts, spices, and sometimes ground chilies. That sounds pretty good.
Oh, not spicy. Mm-hmm. Not a spicy snowball there.
And the countries of Malaysia and Korea have their own iced dessert versions, kind of a combination of chopped fruit, condensed milk. You can't go wrong with anything that has condensed milk in it. Nuts, beans, rice cakes. So, you know, if you happen to be traveling in Korea, John, in the heat of the summer.
I will keep in mind that no matter where I'm traveling around the world, that ice is a necessity. And I can think of a cool business here in Louisiana that's still interested in getting ice the old-fashioned block way, and we're going to talk all about that. So, y'all, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking snowballs.
Mm.
Wrap up your weekday mornings here on KRVS with the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle, guiding you through an hour-long showcase spotlighting both the latest releases from talent both near and far, and classics you may have forgotten about. Also news about local performing arts, and much more. The Medicine Ball Caravan, Monday through Thursdays at 11 a.m. here on KRVS.
Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock transcends boundaries, expands horizons, celebrates tradition, stimulates innovation. It's music to bring people together, so why don't you join us?
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
We're live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice, Louisiana, every Saturday night from 6 to 7:30. Hi, this is Barry Onsley inviting you to join us right here on KRVS for the Rendezvous des Cajuns every Saturday night from 6 to 7:30 with great Cajun music, Zydeco, lots of other regional music, stories, commentary, and who knows what else, because we are live from the Liberty Theater in Eunice, Louisiana.
Thank you. sham. We've been chugging up in here. Got up for work 5 days this week.
It's the weekend.
It's the weekend. And I'm ready to hit the streets. Music's got me jumping. Can't sit in my chair.
Just wanna dance.
I just wanna dance. And I don't care where.
I've got my ice chest.
Got my ice chest.
And my lawn chair.
Lawn chair.
You got your ice chest?
He's been working 5 days, and he's got his ice chest, and he needs to dance. That's what I like
about
that.
That's right. He's got, did it say he had his lawn chair?
Yeah, his lawn chair,
yeah.
You know, country people always love to carry those aluminum lawn chairs with them when they go somewhere. It's part of uniform.
Part of the ambiance.
Yeah, it's part of the uniform, you know. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best-tasting food and culture show on radio. It's so nice to have all of you with us today. We're talking about the ice industry and had a lot of fun reminiscing on the fact that ice, as old as it is so new to the South. And then refrigerators had to come along and mess up everything, you know, back in the 1940s. Anyway, we have a great guest joining us today, somebody that we really enjoy. And you and I had an opportunity to go and hang out at her place the other day. Why don't you go ahead and introduce her?
We have Ashley Hansen on the show with us today of Hansen Snow Blizz. Ashley owns and operates Hansen Snow Blizz. It's the oldest snowball stand in New Orleans, and probably the country for that matter. You know, hers is a story of commitment to family, to quality, and of course, commitment to New Orleans. It was in 1937 that her grandfather, Ernest Hansen, made history by building the first block ice shaver. God bless Ernest Hansen. He named the shaver Snow Blizz. His wife, Mary, now she was a smart businesswoman, and, you know, she recognized a good thing when she saw it, so she started selling snowballs. 2 cents a piece from her front porch underneath a china ball tree, which I know that just warms your heart, John, the china ball tree.
Yeah, I went and looked at my china ball tree Sunday.
Even though her price was a penny higher than the competition, her customer base grew. They knew a good thing, too. When Ashley's father was born, her grandfather built a second machine using all stainless steel and cast aluminum parts. By this time, business was so good that Mary left the China Ball Tree location and opened Hansen Snow Blizz and Sweet Shop on Chapultepec, where it is still located today. When Ernest retired from the machine shop industry, he joined Mary in the business. They worked hand in hand. In 2006, you know, after Katrina and after the death of her grandparents, Ashley took over proprietorship of Hansen, and she's been operating it ever since. Now, she's kind of taken the snow biz on the road, so to speak. We'll talk about that with her, on-site catering. We can't imagine New Orleans without the unique treat of snowballs, and we certainly can't imagine snowballs without Hansen's. Ashley, welcome to Stirring It Up. It's great to have you with us again.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We paid you a visit. We missed you. We missed you just by a nudge. We should have let you know we were coming, but we didn't know we were coming to the last second.
Well, I'm glad you stopped in and you got to see the place.
Oh, my gosh. It is so charming. And, you know, we don't have to ask you how business is. We know how business is. We stood in that line that was out the door.
Look, I took about 5 pictures of Michelle in line in different kind of poses, switching from one leg to the other, looking at the
camera. I was eager. That's a lesson in patience, standing in that line.
Ashley, let me tell you about a lesson in patience, okay? The most amazing thing about Hansen's Snow Blizz is this. When people get up to the counter, you have two or three eager little salespeople there, and the first question is, what do I want? There's 50 people out of the door, and here's this charming little girl who looks like she weighs about 50 pounds with this big smile on her face. And what should I have? What's your favorite? What's the biggest? What's the number one? I'm thinking that she's just so cordial and wonderful. She's got a smile on the face. And I'm thinking to myself, I would just punch that person right in the face. I say, you've been waiting in line for 40 minutes, and you're going to ask me, look at all the
I've often thought of putting, like, lines on the ground, like at Disney World. And by this point, you should know what cup size you want. By this point in line, you have 10 minutes to decide what flavor you want to buy.
Oh, my God.
That's a good idea.
Would that be funny? I wish, oh, my God, you have to do that. It was so funny because I was thinking the whole time, and even with that, the line moved unbelievably fast because they're so good at what they do.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing is a challenge for them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Look, being in business, Ashley, seeing the number of people you have on a hot day and how your people handle that is absolutely incredible. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I think that's a testament to the spirit of Mary and Ernest Hansen. I think we all here, everyone who works here, we keep them in mind every day and how they would handle situations and how they were and their attitudes. And, you know, they loved people. My grandmother would talk and talk and talk and talk. And my grandfather would stand there and quietly, patiently wait while she had her conversation, and then he would move on to the next customer. You know? But I think on a daily basis, we think about them and keeping their tradition around friendly service and Southern graciousness.
And it's a happy business, you know.
Genuinely.
Absolutely. You can't be sad around a snowball.
And remember all the girls that were outside on there. They had about 15 or 20 schoolgirls, mm-hmm. and they were all together against the side of the building, and they were having all the girl chat that they do. And I said, would y'all mind taking a picture of me with my snowball, because I want to have a picture in front of this place? And they all jumped up. Yeah, I'll take a picture. It was a happy place. Let me tell you, it was my first time there, but it certainly won't be my last.
That's kind of our confession to you, Ashley. Wednesday, June 19th just changed my life, and it certainly changed my vision of a snowball, because I grew up with that chipped ice. And frankly, I'm a little bit of a strange person, I guess, but I don't like the chipped ice. I mean, I eat it because, you know, that's all I knew, but I know better now. Oh my gosh, that's got to be the secret to the success, or part of it anyway, the ice.
Yes, I completely agree. The way my grandfather designed his machine, it's like no other. And I think when people refer to New Orleans snowballs, somewhere they're referring to a Hansen snowball.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because it's unique. The flavors are absolutely incredible. Do you stay open most of the year, or is there a shut-off period and an open-up period again?
We are seasonal. We open up in March, and when the weather starts to warm up, and we close probably late September, early October. Even though it could be 100 degrees outside in October, people don't want snowballs. It's a mindset in New Orleans where by the time Labor Day rolls around, people really start looking to, even though we don't see cooler temperatures here for a long time, people really start looking forward to pumpkin pie and fall temperatures.
Right, no, sure.
That makes sense.
You're not supposed to create a flavor for
it. Yeah, I know. No,
I forgot.
I'm still waiting.
I promise you, we will not see the pumpkin season before I bring you my name and my snowball. I promise you that.
You know, Ashley, we were kind of talking about the history of Hansen's, and of course, Katrina affected everybody. So in 2006, y'all had a kind of a reopening party, which had to be a fairly emotional event. At that point, you know, everybody had been through a roller coaster of emotion, and your grandparents had passed away. But obviously, the community embraced this reopening. Tell us about that celebration.
Well, I don't know if it was so much as a celebration. I mean, it was a celebration in the fact that we were able to get reopened, but it was a lot of hard work. I mean, you know, rolling up the sleeves, getting everything clean and back to ship shape. And we had lost some of the roof here, but it was just an emotional drive. There were a lot of food people in this community that offered to help me clean up and get everything straightened. I'm talking food writers, people that just love our food culture here in the city, you know, really contacted me and said, what can we do for you? And between my family and the support of these foodies, we were able to open after my grandfather's death in 2006. And, I mean, it just went to show me the love and support of the city.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, Ashley, as a young girl, did you take part in the business at all as a family member, or come in to work on weekends? Or
absolutely. I grew up across the street from my grandparents, and we were just so close. They would take my sister and I all over the city to eat. in some of the finest restaurants. My mom would kid that we had eaten in the finest restaurants before we were 6 years old. And so this sort of transpired at the snowball stand, too. You know, like, they would pick us up or pick me up, and we would come to the snowball stand, and I would stay all day with them in the summertime. And eventually, I would just wash bottles for them or do the cleaning that I could. And eventually, my grandmother promoted me to making change for customers and taking the money. And I was horrible in math, and I probably made more mistakes going into that promotion. But, you know, she taught me how to do it, and she taught me, I was painfully shy, and so she also taught me how to talk to people. She was a consistent, empowered woman, and she was such a role model for me.
That's awesome.
I mean, that is. That's a great story. I mean, and I actually could feel emotion in your voice when you say that. And I understand it very well, because I come from that same type of background where grandparents were just so instrumental in our upbringing. I can feel your love for them just by the way you talk about them. Hey, that's really great to hear.
She was quite a lady. She was a character.
I bet she was. Was it her idea to move the business from the China Ball Tree there to Chapultepec? And was there ever a thought of moving from there?
They rented at first very close to this location. And then when they were able to buy this place with their parents' help, they bought the Chapultepec location. And then they never moved, even though people told her, oh, you're at the end of the earth over there in Chapultepec. Who's going to come find you over there? And sure enough, people found them.
And still do.
Yes.
Still doing.
We are off the beaten path, that's for sure.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the machine itself, just for all these machine enthusiasts out there. What happened to that original machine that he built and the second one that he improved upon? Because I saw the machine that was in there when I was there the other day, and I thought a little bit about this conversation we had had about him creating that first machine. Did y'all ever keep it? Is it in the archives, or do you know what happened to it?
No. Yes, I have it here at the stand. His first prototype was made in 1934, and it has a wooden interior. I found it after Katrina in my grandparents' basement. It's definitely a relic. The second machine that he approved upon was built in 1939, and that is the single machine that we use today. We use it every day. And
wow, so that's the machine right there on the counter. That's the machine.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Goodness. You know, I was amazed at the variety of flavors that you had, from traditionals to some really interesting ones, and of course we could only get, you know, one each that day. So I had Satsuma, John had vanilla bean. Of course, we had the condensed milk in it. And, you know, liked to got into a little spat about who had the best one. But you know, but the flavors.
Those two flavors are really good together.
Oh, really?
You see, that's why she needs to be there when we go, because I would say, just do it for me. Just do it. I don't even want to think about it. That way I know which one I would get. I'd get probably the most remarkable blend of flavors. I couldn't imagine, right? I couldn't imagine, because she has all this experience.
I had never had a snowball with condensed milk before.
Oh, really?
That was so good.
Some people consider snowballs a mere vehicle for their condensed milk. I mean, some people layer the condensed milk in with the snow, you know.
That's not a bad idea. I may have to do that next time.
You know, consistently, I mean, with all the flavors y'all have, I mean, I know you have those that just, because people kind of follow their thoughts and never, there was this change, I'm sure, and experimental folks coming in are really the ones that I find interesting. What consistently are some of the best flavor sellers that you have?
Well, traditionally, our best flavors are nectar cream and chocolate. And so those are recipes my grandmother always had. And then I've come up with some different flavors that are just as good, if not even more delicious in some ways, like the Satsuma and vanilla bean. We do follow some like food trends when it comes to snowballs.
Right, right.
And we do a special snowball every Friday. We kind of try things out. Like we did a grapefruit basil snowball, and we have a honey lavender. And I try to do things with real ingredients and real fruit, depending on the season. Like, I guess a month ago for blueberry season, I did a homemade blueberry syrup that was combined with maple syrup. And I'm telling you, your pancakes would, you know, would dream about this concoction. It was so good. So we do offer specials, and we see people on Fridays lining up just to try the concoctions we come up with.
Is Friday the day you roll out your new lab work?
That's correct. We do on Fridays, and then we'll have the syrup for as long as the product lasts. So, you know, with blueberry season, I found some blueberries on sale, and I made a couple bottles, and I think I had to go pick up my kids, and I called work to see how the syrup was going. And Miss Kristen basically said, if you ever make that again, I'll kill you, because it's already gone, and people are clamoring for it. And literally, it was 10 minutes.
Oh,
it flew.
Oh, my God.
You know, that's encouraging, because maybe next year it'll go on the menu or something like that. Maybe, you know, by next year we'll find a way to do it better. And that's kind of what I think the secret is to keep things creative, keep things fun, and make it better for next year.
Well, Ashley, why don't we, since we run out of time, why don't we give everybody your address again so that they know exactly where you are in your hours of operation, that way everybody can hear from your own mouth here.
It's Hanson Snow Blizz, 4801 Chapatoula Street, New Orleans, Louisiana. And we're four blocks from Napoleon Avenue if you're heading toward Audubon Park. We're closed only on Mondays, and we're open 1 to 7.
1 to 7.
On Fridays, it's the best-kept secret in New Orleans, but we open early at 11:30.
Well, I'm brainstorming right now, Michelle. So my new revolutionary, because of my restaurant, my revolutionary chef, John Foster's revolutionary snowball, I'm thinking about maybe a fire-roasted ginger, maybe that, you know, something like that. Or maybe my heirloom tomato salad.
I was going to say,
my heirloom tomato salad. Let me tell you what, you talk about great flavor.
I don't know if people would buy a tomato
That'd
salad. That'd be a savory snowball.
But maybe if it says Chef John Paul's revolutionary, maybe somebody would say, maybe it's a special on Friday for an hour.
That would be wonderful.
Ashley, we come and play with you. I promise that we'll let you know we're coming. And I'm in New Orleans.
Please do.
So when do you come and see me at Revolution and let me know you're coming in?
Oh, I definitely will. Everyone I know have raved about your restaurant, and I can't wait to get there myself. But it's a lot of snowballs, and it's going to be a special occasion.
Well, you let me know when you're coming, because I have an idea. I think we can just trade out each other's ingredients. I mean, I could come eat snowballs with you, and then you come eat Revolution with me. And
I would be the winner on that end.
I don't know about that. Look, girl, we love you to death, and we think that you're doing something that's so special, keeping the traditions alive. And we're going to be there to see you soon, okay?
Okay. I look forward to it. Thank you for calling.
And hug the babies for me, okay?
I will.
Okay, y'all, we're going to see you back in just a minute.
I like my whiskey on ice, my women on fire. I like a good sounding guitar and I won't be called a liar. Spent many long nights with a burning desire for my whiskey on ice and my yes, they always will. They think it's been an easy ride and all been downhill. What they don't think about, what they don't realize, is the shoes that I'm filling are a mighty big size. One night in Nashville tried to take my life.
What's happening musically in Dakar? Joburg, Kinshasa, Port Spain, Havana, Accra, Dar es Salaam, Cairo, Paris, New York. Well, tune in this week and every week to find out on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Klein, Peter, or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
Greetings.
Move to KRVS every Sunday night for 2 hours of hardcore classic Rasta reggae radio right here on Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights 9 to 11 p.m., Saturday mornings 1 to 3 here on KRVS, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
You're as cold as ice. I wonder who he's talking to, Michelle.
I bet you there was a subject of that song.
That was the subject of that song. You can tell that's a passionate little song. Hey, y'all, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And today we're talking about cool, cold ice. And before I get to today's recipe, Dean, what about Facebook? Any comments from our listeners? Anybody biting fire? By the way, I fired up the old smokehouse yesterday just to make sure all the controls were working well at Old Smoky. And anybody biting on our challenge to be the first to put meat in the smokehouse in over, well, I don't know, maybe 100 years?
And say we're still open. We're still looking for that recipe, that number one recipe that'll be the first in the smokehouse.
Okay, well, we're still open.
We do have this Facebook page, y'all. The Stovehounds know about it, but if you're a first listener driving through an I-10, perhaps, and you're wondering, how could I continue this conversation? Well, we're doing that on Facebook. It's facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that's without a G, right, John?
Right, without a G. S-T-I-R-R-I-N. Stirring it up.
And so we're always looking for, you know.
You put the snowball pictures on,
those
right?
Are going up.
I want to make sure those snowball pictures up. I want to show y'all what Michelle looks like in the line, you know. I took some pictures of Hanson's, too. That was pretty nice.
Oh, yeah, that was nice.
I love that old. I mean, they hadn't touched the place since Grandfather built it.
It looks very authentic.
No, it is. I mean, it's exactly what it should look like.
Yep.
And, you know, she dropped that secret. I don't want to really mention it again, but, I mean, it's worth mentioning
again.
I'll say nothing
about the secret. She just said it over the air. I mean, my God.
Really
11 o'clock on
that.
Fridays. Can you imagine?
Ooh.
I'm going to be there. And that's the day she does experimental work.
That's right.
I like that. What about books, Michelle? What's going on in the culinary library? Every week, you know, we try to give you a couple of books on the subject, so that you can build your own library at home of the topics we speak of here. So what do you have?
Well, the first book I wanted to mention is called Ice Cream and Iced Desserts. This was written by Joanna Farrow back in 2000. Ms. Farrow actually worked as a food writer on Women's Magazine. She's actually written or co-written almost 70 cookbooks, everything from cupcakes to Mediterranean cooking. This book got rave reviews, and it's filled with recipes for sorbets and parfaits and Italian granitas and Indian kulfi.
Kulfi.
Their ice drink of India. All types of desserts, all kinds of cool, refreshing desserts for these hot summer days.
Right.
The other book I wanted to recommend for the history buffs and the culture buffs out there is The Frozen Water Trade, A True Story by Gavin Waitman. This is the story of the industry of ice and the man who started it, Frederick Tudor. It talks about the ridicule he suffered, the years of hardship, the near bankruptcy of the family fortune, but then success and thereby making history, making
another fortune. Yeah, he made a fortune.
Yeah, made another fortune for himself and for his family, The Frozen Water Trade. So that's a great one. And then also Ice Cream and Ice Desserts. We'll have information on both of these books on your on the website, so everybody can check it out.
All right, fantastic. So y'all, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/startingitupradio. It's right there. And once again, we want to thank all of you who listen to the show. On we have that little podcast going, don't we?
Yeah, we just put an archive site up, so you can check out the old shows. We got most of all 2013 shows, but they're all podcasts, and you can check them out. It's a free download, so you can put it on your smartphone, listen to it on your ride home, which I know our stove hound David Hubble is really fond of doing.
Well, good.
But, yeah, all our shows are out there.
Okay, y'all, we have a couple of little choices on our recipe today.
We ought to do more than one. I'm just going to put it out there.
Okay, well, look, I have a little blackberry granita with lemon cream. That's a pretty good one.
Mm-hmm.
I have a frozen plum pop.
Yeah.
You like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then a melon cooler. That sounds pretty good.
That sounds good.
Let's do the melon cooler, y'all. And you talk about a refreshing dessert. It's kind of a part smoothie and part snowball. It's a sweet, kind of healthy way, too, by the way, to keep cool during these hot dog days of summer, we call them, right?
Mm, that's right.
And, y'all, this is simple because you're going to begin with 2 cups of super ripe cantaloupe cut into 1/2-inch cubes and frozen. 2 cups of honeydew melon cut into 1/2 cubes and frozen, 1/2-inch cubes. Now, Michelle, let me ask you something. You know how to tell a perfectly ripe cantaloupe. The biggest mistake people make when selecting whether it's watermelon or cantaloupe or honeydew, how do you tell a ripe melon on the store shelf so when you get home and you cut it open, it's like nectar sweet? Yeah?
Well,
you remember?
I do.
Let's start with the cantaloupe.
Well, let's start with watermelon.
You want to go to either.
I want to start with the watermelon because that's the one we've actually talked about. Watermelon needs to have a dry stem. You check for a dry stem.
Not only a dry stem, almost like crackling brown. It's so dry.
And then on the bottom, it needs to be very yellow because that means it sat in the field for a long time and it had a chance to truly ripen. And, you know, what has happened is that I've become almost an overripe melon picker. You know, when I get them, sometimes I get them almost too sweet. You taught me well.
Well, let me tell you what. When I teach my culinary class at Nichols, I call them yellow bellies. I said, if you don't buy a yellow belly or a yellow striper, just get out of my way. I'm not interested.
Well, that's true. It's helped me pick some really good melons.
Y'all, when you go into the store, the first thing you want to look at on that big heap of melons, find one that has about a 2 to 3 inch yellow stripe with some brown flecks in it, just like a banana almost, all the way across the melon from end to end. Don't stop right in the middle. You want to get that yellow stripe all the way across the bottom and kind of almost starting to wanting to get some little brown flecks in it. Then you look at the vine end of the melon where it connected to the vine. And that little 1-inch piece should be, that little stem should be all dark brown, dried out, almost twisted. And even the little navel, I'm going to call it the little navel of the melon where the stem goes into the melon, that should also be slightly brown. If it's green or the melon stem is green, stay away from it. Don't even touch it because that melon will not be ripe. That melon will not be ripe. So begin with the yellow stripe. If it doesn't have that yellow stripe all the way across the bottom, don't worry about the stem. And if it's got a yellow stripe that has some little brown flecks in it, that means it's even riper. And then you look for the stem. Chances are really good that melon will have a dried out stem. And even the little navel portion will be brown as well. So that's the way you get in. You can also add melon to this recipe. Cantaloupe, you know how a cantaloupe looks like it has a web around outside of it? Well, inside that web should all be golden yellow and no green.
You know, it's
if you see green in front in that web, walk by it.
I've been choosing correctly then, but I'm going to tell you, it's not easy to find that in the stores today. A majority of the cantaloupes are still green, and I try to find that yellow look.
All that web, when you look inside.
Because it's not going to continue to ripen.
Not going to continue to ripen, that's right. It's not going to, I mean, it'll sit there, and of course, you know, like a peach gets soft or whatever else. But by the same token, you know, once you take it off of that vine, it's where it's going to be. So, you know, it's going to probably rot before it gains any sugar. So anyway, y'all, 2 cups of cantaloupes frozen and cut into those 1/2-inch cubes and frozen. 2 cups of honeydew. A cup of water divided. So what I'm going to do in a blender on high speed, I'm going to puree that frozen cantaloupe with 1/2 cup of water and 1 tablespoon of sugar until the fruit is smooth and pourable. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to transfer the fruit mixture to a medium-sized bowl and keep it chill. I put it in the refrigerator and continue the process with the honeydew. I've done that with the cantaloupe, with half of the water, and do the same thing with the honeydew. Then to assemble, you spoon alternating layers of the pureed cantaloupe and the pureed honeydew in glasses, and you fill them all the way to the top, garnish with a sprig of mint, and serve immediately. And it's almost like you can add a
little... So it's just liquid. It's just a liquid cantaloupe.
Well, it's a slushy because the melon is frozen. And
okay.
The tablespoon of sugar enhances the sweetness, and you put it in the refrigerator, and then you layer it, and you suck it with a straw. So it's like a melon cooler. So as you get from layer to layer, that's why I say you could do watermelon, too. So you got yellow, green,
like
and red. Doesn't that look nice?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And the fact that it's ice cubes, when you slush it in a Cuisinart or a food processor, you're going to have this slushy, and then you throw it right back in the freezer, and then you layer it up.
And that's got to be pretty healthy, too.
It's called a melon cooler.
Melon cooler. I like that.
And you can use a Splenda or something
Very
in place
cool.
of the sugar, right? Let me, while y'all debating that, blackberry granita with lemon cream, is that the one you feel like, huh?
Okay.
Now, well, you like that, or do you like the frozen plum pop?
I like that frozen plum pop.
Plum?
Well, you know, on these hot summer days, y'all, nothing's better than a little pop, right?
Yeah, you got to find a good plum, though.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, a pound of assorted plums, pitted, finely chopped and divided. I'd go with purple plums myself, but, I mean, they got two or three different plums in the supermarket mm-hmm. during the summers. Assorted plums, pitted and freshly chopped and divided. That's what you're going to be dealing with.
With the peel?
With the peel on, yeah. And in a small saucepan, you're going to bring a quarter cup of granulated sugar. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
1 tablespoon of corn syrup, just a white corn syrup, and water, which is about just a quarter cup. And you're going to bring that to a boil, stirring occasionally with a little whisk until that sugar dissolves, and you're going to remove it from the heat and allow it to cool. So you can do that in advance. You've made a simple syrup is what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to divide the mixture evenly between two bowls. So you can take that little simple syrup, divide it between two bowls. And working in batches and using a blender, you're going to puree a half a pound of plums. Now, you're going to just puree them. Deseeded. And in one bowl of the cool syrup, you're going to add 4 teaspoons of lime juice, and you're going to kind of smooth that in. And then in the second bowl, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to repeat the process in the second bowl using the remaining plums. And the reason for that is if you have two different types of plums, that way you have some different flavors going there. And then in a large bowl, you're going to combine the plum puree with 6 ounces of plain yogurt. Because then remember, you got two bowls, and in each bowl, you're going to have a little bit of that simple syrup we made with the sugar, the corn syrup, and the water, right? We're going to divide that in half. We're going to puree the plums, and we're going to put them in that bowl, and we're going to keep them cool. And then we're going to add 8 tablespoons of fresh lime juice divided. So you got 4 tablespoons of lime juice in each
mm-hmm.
bowl, right?
Okay.
And then 6 ounces of plain yogurt in each bowl. Okay, and that's what you have. Then you need 12 of those freezer pop molds, which you can buy at any one of the big box stores
mm-hmm.
or Williams-Sonoma or any of those kind of places you can buy. They're easy to get now. Everybody has them. So then, of course, you know what the next step is going to be. You're going to blend the yogurt into that simple syrup with the fruit mixture, and you're going to fill each one of the pops up. And if you got the two different colors, you can divide them up so that you get different colors in the pop. And you're going to freeze them for 4 hours or overnight until solid, and you know what you have, right?
You got a plum pop.
You got a frozen plum pop.
That sounds delicious.
I make those all the time.
Yeah,
Monkey.
I bet you do.
I make them for Monkey, my little dog.
Oh, huh? Please.
So, Michelle, what do you do to keep cool? Do you have a pool at your house?
Not at my house, but in my neighborhood.
Y'all share a neighborhood. I do not go to neighborhood pools.
I do not trust
neighborhood pools because I don't know what's going on in those things.
Well, they've got the chlorine. You know,
chlorine does not kill a lot of that stuff. I'm telling you right now. I had a little friend of mine who jumped in.
Oh, here we go.
I'm just telling you. I remember F.A. Barris. What happened to him when he jumped into our community pool? I'm not going any further.
They've got these pools now that are cleaned with the salt water. They've got the salt water pool.
Yeah.
And they've got a little float that goes around and converts the salt water to a natural chlorine so it doesn't have that effect on your skin.
Yeah, but you gotta be rich for one of those. We're talking about those poor people. I mean, you know you live in New Orleans. I mean, that's a lot, that's big money.
And they have those infinity pools.
Infinity.
I never heard about that. What's
or
that?
You know, it's just like glass and it just kind of doesn't have an end.
Those are for estates. Well, those are for
stage. Yeah, I don't have one of those.
That's not, I have a little pool in my house.
He has what you call a cocktail pool. Now, he's had this pool well over 15 years, Llama. I'm just going to tell you the rest of the story.
A cocktail pool?
Yes. And on these hot summer days, you would think that at some point he'd say, you know, why don't we just all go for a little dip? I'll serve plum pops.
Yeah, plum pops.
Poolside. And in all these years, we've never had a pool day.
No pool day.
No pool day in the pool cocktail party, pool. Huh?
Well, I tell you what, I rent my pool out.
No! You charge admission.
I rent my pool out in the neighborhood. I got to be quiet about it. I don't want the neighborhood to know I'm making money back there. Every now and then you see like 15 kids sneaking with big towels around the back of a fence so nobody knows exactly. I got to keep things quiet.
Mm-hmm. And I tell the kids, no. You're charging little children.
I tell the kids, no yelling and all that stuff around here. No yelling. I don't want the neighbors to know there's an enterprise going on here. And the kids love my pool because, of course, I have all the amenities.
The amenities.
Yeah, the amenities.
Like what?
Well, like all the floaties and the little
cigars. You have floaties.
Absolutely anything for the children.
Mm-hmm.
You go out there on one of those floaties?
No, you mean with the kids?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
They're like on a Sunday afternoon. Are you floating on a floatie? Like if I went with the children and peered over the fence, what would I see? Would I see you on a floatie?
No, I wouldn't be on a floatie.
You'd have one of those noodles.
I don't even know what a noodle is. Anyway, now, y'all, it's summer, and I tell you, in the summer, it's one of those strange times where we either look for cool pools or just imaginative cold pops that you can get, and you get them both right here. Y'all, it's summertime. Be safe in all that sun. Have some good fun, and we're going to see you next week.